You're listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, broadcasting from Raleigh, North Carolina, serving the blind and print-impaired community since 1983. This is Nancy Jones. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from the combined July-August 2025 issue of Vanity Fair magazine, which features Pedro Pascal on the cover. This is Vanity Fair, Part A. Here's the editor's letter from Radhika Jones, Editor-in-Chief. In April, I announced that I would be stepping down from my role at Vanity Fair, and by the time this issue is in your hands, I'll have handed over the reins to our acting editor, Daniel Kyle. It gives me immense pleasure to present Pedro Pascal as the final cover subject under my tenure. Pedro checks multiple boxes in my personal pantheon. He had a guest spot on a classic episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. He nailed his bit with Coleman Domingo on our 2024 Hollywood cover. And when he and I sat next to each other at the Met Gala in 2023, he companionably offered me a swig from a small flask with a high I Heart New York logo on it, which he admitted to buying in Times Square just for the occasion. He was wearing a pair of formal shorts that set the red carpet on fire. He's a Gen X legend, gorgeously one of a kind. I started my first job in journalism in the summer of 1995 at the Moscow Times in Russia. It's been a wild and woolly three decades. Just during my time at Vanity Fair, we've covered a global pandemic, roiling racial and social justice movements, Hollywood strikes and streaming wars, the insurrection at the Capitol, the invasion of Ukraine, the death of a queen, and two nail-biting presidential elections. It has been deeply gratifying work. We've also had a lot to celebrate. As editor, my goal was to tap firmly into Vanity Fair's DNA as a magazine about the zeitgeist, reveling in contemporary culture in all its diversity and offering a place of discovery, of new talent, new ideas, new ways of thinking about the world. The times we live in have certainly helped shape our reporting, but our choices of game-changing cover stars, iconic imagery, immersive feature stories, and provocative investigations have also helped define the times. Editors are granted their individual pet peeves. One of mine, for the record, is use of the verb pinned. No one is pinning anything these days, I promise you. But truthfully, magazines and all their attendant parts, from videos and docuseries to podcast and social post, are the ultimate collective endeavor. I have been privileged to work with a group of extraordinary writers, editors, designers, photographers, and producers at Vanity Fair. The masthead printed in each issue is, in real life, a vital community, collegial, creative, ambitious, and hilarious. I salute every one of them, smart and savvy thinkers whose work consistently raised the bar and whose wit in our Slack channels and Signal chats routinely brought me joy. Looking over old emails, I came across a note from a reader commenting on a jam-packed summer issue, not unlike the one you're reading now. It is an escape, but isn't oblivious. It finds thrilling narratives hidden underneath the headlines. It questions orthodoxies, no matter from whom. It understands that human relationships are often the driving force behind the stories of the day. It has been my honor as editor to put these stories into your hands. I hope your encounters with Vanity Fair have been equally rewarding. And as I happily rejoin the ranks of our readers, I wish Vanity Fair's next steward good fortune, good fun, and never a dull moment. Here are some of the contributors to the issue. Andre Carrillo, A Modern Prometheus. The interesting thing about satirizing Trump is that all hyperbole eventually becomes true, says the artist, who in this issue illustrates Christian Farias' column on Chief Justice John Roberts. These are people who would be too outrageous for fiction, thus very compelling to draw from life. Catherine Avon, Whatever Means Necessary. Avon's 2024 story, Inside the Bungled Bird Flu Response, recently won the George Polk Award for National Reporting and the Association of Healthcare Journalist Award in Public Health, among others. This month, she profiles Callie Means, a leader of the MAHA movement. Christian Farias, A Modern Prometheus. Judges won't save us, says Farias, Vanity Fair legal contributor, and the host of podcast The Bully's Pulpit, who this month writes about Chief Justice John Roberts. It won't be easy to fix what he has broken, but for the sake of our children, we cannot afford not to try. Rosemarie Cromwell, Big Swing. Cromwell's photography explores the effects of globalization as well as the space between the political and the spiritual. A background that served her well photographing the new golf league, TGL. She will have a solo exhibition on view at Equinom Gallery later this year. Sam Tenenhaus, The Godfather Presidency. The longtime Vanity Fair contributor went to Capitol Hill during the first 100 days of Trump 2.0 to report on the administration's mob-like playbook. His new book, Buckley, The Life and the Revolution That Changed America, was published this spring. Béat Bollinger, Brave Heart. A longtime fashion editor, Bollinger got his start in magazines, but has also styled for the runway and campaign work. Swiss-born, he is based between Paris and Milan. For this issue's cover portfolio, Bollinger styled genre-hopping actor Pedro Pascal in London. Scream Queen by Rebecca Ford. Chase Swee wonders, battles, serial killers, and bloodthirsty paparazzi with equal aplomb. Growing up, Chase Swee wonders wouldn't be caught dead at a slasher movie, but she stopped being afraid of them after making the horror comedy Bodies, 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 which is a good thing, because in July she's headlining a sequel to the 90s classic I Know What You Did Last Summer. She was thrilled to make the movie with two of the original's stars, Jennifer Love Hewitt and Freddie Prinze Jr. They were so welcoming. They were so willing to hang, she says. Swee Wonders has been surrounded by her idols a lot lately. She plays an ambitious newbie executive in Apple TV Plus's hit The Studio, a part she nabbed after star and co-creator Seth Rogen asked her to improvise. My heart sank into my gut, she says. It went on for what felt like 10 minutes, and then he lit up a joint and said, great work. The role allowed her to perform wild comedy, and now she's craving more. I just want to play complicated characters, she says, women who are unafraid to be crazy or weird or ugly. As a kid, Swee Wonders says she didn't have any friends in elementary school. Instead, she spent all her time with her three siblings watching movies and making their own films. Creativity runs in the family. Her aunt is the designer, Anna Swee. Yet she didn't plan to pursue filmmaking or acting when she was accepted to Harvard. My plan was to study astrophysics, she says. I was like, this is what people go to Harvard to do. That changed after she started failing astrophysics classes. Swee Wonders majored in film studies and production, wrote for the Harvard Lampoon, and got an agent, thanks to help from a friend working in the agency's mailroom. Even then, she wasn't sure she'd make it. I was seriously flirting with this idea that I would just say goodbye to it all and become a corporate drone in Beijing. Then she wrote a script, booked a role on the HBO Max show Generations, and landed Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. In the latter, Swee Wonders played Emma, an actor brought to a hurricane party by her boyfriend, played by Pete Davidson. Life started to imitate art when Swee Wonders and Davidson began dating. They reportedly broke up less than a year later, but the experience taught her about the uglier aspects of Hollywood. I learned early on in my career how nasty that side of the business is, she says. Hollywood can play a lot of tricks on you. It's so seductive with events and the flashing lights and the people calling your name. It's very easy to get swept up in that. Swee Wonders hasn't always felt as if the industry was bursting with opportunities for people of mixed ethnicity like her. She's half Asian. I would try so hard, and I would put myself on tape, but it never felt quite right, she says. That, too, is changing. Her part in The Studio wasn't originally written for a biracial actor. She was interested in I Know What You Did Last Summer, largely because you just don't see that many people who look like me playing these kind of leading ingenue roles, she says. The thing that I originally felt very complicated about has now become sort of my superpower. And though her acting career has taken off, Swee Wonders still has plans to write and direct. In 2022, she made and co-starred in a short film called Wake. She hopes to collaborate soon with her sister, who is also a filmmaker. The possibilities now seem endless. It feels like the world has opened up to me as I've opened up to myself. Sure Thing by Kayla Holiday, with photograph by Vanessa Granda, showing a Fendi beaded baguette bag. The coral reef is a paradox of time, as its life forms continually give way to something new. Like the underwater ecosystem, Fendi is looking to its past to move forward. The Italian fashion house's baguette bag features a red coral bandana motif in beadwork over white leather, reminiscent of the fantastical themes of Istuardo, the 1977 short film that presented Karl Lagerfeld's first ready-to-wear collection for Fendi. This one is sure to make a splash. Here's what's trending. Scandi Dandy. In Copenhagen, a dip in Rechelon Harbor, a bike ride from Lille Bakery to La Banquina restaurant, and an abundance of sun across the city make for a picturesque summer holiday. In the photos, the scene at La Banquina in Rechelon. People's Republic of Kashmir cardigan. Steingoya scarf. Sophie Biel Bry earrings. Woods Copenhagen intense peel mask. Tekla beach towel. Hilmar Dahl studio vase. Ole Lingard Copenhagen pendant. By Malene Berger blazer. Woodwood shirt. Skal dress. Biro skirt. Gunny blouse. Pandora Infinite 14 karat gold lab grown diamond bangle. Finn Jewel sofa. Atelier September Apartamento cookbook. George Jensen pitcher. Henrik Wiebskov glasses. Lie studio bag. Honey face oil. Frama hand lotion, and Cecily Bonson sneakers. And this from Daisy Shaw Ellis. Dwell a minute, with photograph by Vanessa Granda of a Rolex Land Dweller 36 in oyster steel and white gold. After conquering the sea and the sky, Rolex is making a land grab. The Swiss watchmaker, famed for its waterproof oyster design, debuted the Land Dweller this spring with versions in oyster steel and white gold, Everrose gold, and platinum. Recalling two vintage models from the 60s and 70s, the Land Dweller features technology that was more than 7 years in the making. With its integrated bracelet with flat links, transparent back showcasing the interior mechanics, and honeycomb dial, its wearer will be ready to hit the ground running. Flow state. Following an aggressive cancer diagnosis and the end of her marriage, Katie Nicholl finds tranquility at the Oberoi. The pool at the Oberoi Beach Resort, Lombok, and a Bali villa, as well as the hotel's turtle hatchery. I was having my very own eat, pray, love moment, lying on a yoga mat, listening to the sound of the sea, the warm frangipani scent that follows a monsoon downpour, filling my nostrils and tears rolling down my face. My yogi Yani touched my tummy as I lay in Savasana and told me to envision a ball of green light energy entering my body, cleansing me. As I did, a tsunami of grief erupted. Having just celebrated my 48th birthday, I had traveled to the Oberoi Beach Resorts in Bali and Lombok for a spiritual retreat where I'd been promised my own personal journey of self-discovery. By way of the Indonesian coastline and my own five-star villa complete with outdoor pool and emperor-size hand-carved wooden bed, I was getting it. Lest you think me indulgent, let me assure you, it had been a turbulent 2 years. On Valentine's Day, 2023, I received the life-shattering call, I had cholangiocarcinoma, also known as bile duct cancer. I had been awaiting the results of a precautionary MRI following indigestion and mild heart palpitations. Not in my worst nightmares did I suspect I had a rare cancer with a terrible survival rate. I knew I was looking my mortality in the eye. I also knew I was determined to watch my 7-year-old son and 12-year-old daughter grow up. When my surgeon, Dora Pisanu, told me the tumor was operable, I made a pact with myself, not only to make a full recovery, but to live life to the full. A year later, newly in remission and single, my marriage of 18 years, which had been hanging by a thread before my diagnosis, collapsed. I knew that having healed physically from surgery and chemotherapy, I needed to heal emotionally and spiritually. Then an email about the 7-day Oberoi program dropped in my inbox. I arrived in Bali in late March, just in time for the Balinese New Year. The festival, which includes Nyepi, a day of silence, is intended to cleanse the island and drive out malevolent spirits. My timing was auspicious. My bamboo and coconut leaf villa became my sanctuary. A sunken bath overlooked a small garden and private pool. I booked regular massages, including a Balinese head massage that immediately soothed my stressed and flaky scalp. The service was first class. A member of the staff polished sunglasses by the pool, and I had nothing to worry about but my own thoughts. Apart from speaking to my children, I switched off for the first time in months. This was my chance to replenish myself. And though I initially worried about traveling alone, I found great pleasure in my own company and dining solo. While in Bali, I took a handwritten letter to lay at a temple known as a pura, which sits at the center of a 100-year-old banyan tree in the hotel gardens. It was my message to the universe, thanking it for my life, my family, my friends, and for the new life-affirming love that arrived when I was least expecting it. In Eastern medicine, wood is aligned with the liver. I had 50% of mine resected, but it has since nearly entirely regrown. And there was something about this tree, the way its giant roots burrowed deep into the ground, that resonated with me. It reminded me of the scar that now runs down my body, dividing my life into a before and after cancer. When I arrived in Lombok, known as the Island of a Thousand Mosques, it was the end of Ramadan, and prayers echoed around the island. Less developed than Bali, the countryside is mountainous and green with rice fields. In the nearby Gili Islands, I swam in crystal-clear waters with wild turtles, sacred creatures that represent wisdom, stability, and longevity, which I took to be a good omen. I traveled northeast to Lombok's National Park to see the Sendangjele waterfalls, located at the foot of Mount Rinjani, believed to be a link between Lombok and the heavens, in the village of Sinaru. After a short trek through the rainforest, I ventured into the full force of the waterfall. I stood there, legs shaking, heart pounding. Stepping out of the falls, I've never felt more alive. Greek revival. Along the Aegean, a cadre of major art players has been steadily setting up shop. Here's what to see and where to be seen this season by Nate Freeman. In the photos, Museum of Cycladic Art, the hub for ancient Greek art, also stages shows featuring contemporary works. Stavros Niarchos Foundation Cultural Center, a massive campus designed by Renzo Piano. George Economou Collection, this summer's Charlene Van Heil show took over three floors of the museum. Contemporary art has been thriving in Greece for a long time. 11,000 years ago, Ice Age scrawlers were making cave paintings of dwarf deer on the island of Crete. Remarkable figurative clay sculptures emerged in the Neolithic period around 4000 BC. The art of classical Greece in the 4th and 5th centuries BC is where you get the good stuff. Red figure vases, the marble and gold Athena Parthenos, friezes, reliefs, steles, and amphoras. But in all the millennia of Greek art history, one year stands out, 2009. That's because in 2009, Larry Gagosian, one of the world's most celebrated art dealers, hung his shingle in Athens, opening a gallery in what was then pretty far flung from the culture hubs of Europe. But he was committed. The first show consisted of four new paintings by Cy Twombly, one of the century's most devoted Hellenophiles, each drenched in the cerulean of the Aegean Sea. Eli Broad immediately snapped up one of the paintings, and now it resides in the museum that bears his name in Los Angeles. More than 15 years later, Athens is at the center of a white-hot summertime art odyssey. Each year, cavalcades of collectors, curators, artists, and critics make their way to the birthplace of democracy for a week of museum vernissage, old-world sightseeing, and fetes in the shadow of the Acropolis. Followed by jaunts to the many islands just a tantalizing day trip away. This year, the art schedule in the Greek capital is more jam-packed than usual, mainly because you've got two of the greatest living painters facing off against each other. At the George Economou Collection, a private museum established by the billionaire shipbuilder in 2012, a massive decade survey of Charlene Van Heil, co-curated by former Whitney director Adam Weinberg and Economou collection director Scarlett Smatina, opened in June. The same month, Cycladic Blues, a survey of the artist Marlene Dumas, opened at the Museum of Cycladic Art, featuring her paintings alongside archaeological items hand-picked by the artist from the museum's collection. Next photos, Gagosian Athens. Larry Gagosian's Athens Gallery opened in 2009 as his ninth outpost on Earth. Benaki Museum, the nearly 88,000-square-foot Perios Street Annex, opened in 2004. Desti Slaughterhouse, Dakistoanu, opened his art space in a structure once used to slaughter goats. Speaking of shipping magnates, the Stavros Niarchos Foundation Cultural Center on the outskirts of town opened a show this year of work by Simone Lee, who's been on a tear through the world's great museums, including representing the U.S. at the Venice Biennale in 2022. There's also a show at the Benaki Museum in partnership with the New Museum and Desti Foundation featuring all local Greek artists. And intriguingly, the thoroughly downtown New York gallery Ramekin is opening a space in the Harbor District of Piraeus to show work by Daki Tagaki. After saying a quick yasu to Ramekin founder Michael Egan, you can hop a ferry to Hydra, a car-free island that's long been a freewheeling creative enclave. Henry Miller arrived in 1939, and Leonard Cohen bought a home in the center of town in 1960. Contemporary artists have summered there for decades, And since 2008, the collector Dakis Joannou has hosted exhibitions at the Deste Project Space Slaughterhouse, housed in a former goat slaughterhouse, a short walk from the main port on the island. The June openings are legendary. Each year, Joannou convinces a world-famous artist to create work specifically for the unique space. Recent participants include Jeff Koons, George Kondo, and Maurizio Catalan, and then throws a huge open-air party where every single person on the island is invited, with wine and lamb pita sandwiches for everybody. This year, the artist Andra Arusta brings her futuristic cast glass visions to the exhibition space. And yes, Larry is still leading the charge among galleries in Athens. In 2020, amid pandemic market upheaval, Gagosian opted against closing its Greek space and instead upgraded the digs, launching a new space with fresh paintings by Bryce Martin. This summer in Greece, the gallery debuts work by Oscar Murillo, the polymathic painter and Turner Prize winner who had his first show at Gagosian last year. For at least 1 week a year, it's Gagosian's most important outpost of them all. Draw Straws, Gary Scheitengart by the Seashore, Kate Brode at the Club. It's a pool party in your beach bag with some of the summer's best books. Gucci Mini Top Handlebag paired with Spectacular Things. Beck Dory Stein's sophomore novel unspools the family secrets and sacrifices of U.S. women's team goalkeeper Cricket and her older sister Mia, a complicated love letter to soccer and siblinghood, published by Dial Press. Prada Bag paired with The Payback, Jada Williams, a retail worker with film school cred, a mild klepto streak, and mountains of student loans, wages war against the violent debt police in Kashana Cawley's riotous and righteous revenge plot, published by Atria. Celine Teen Triumph Bag paired with Greenwich, from Kate Brode, in late 90s Connecticut, 17-year-old Rachel summers at her wealthy aunt and uncle's house, spending time with her toddler cousin and the child's nanny before tragedy rends her life in two, published by St. Martin's. The Roe Barn Mini Tote paired with An Oral History of Atlantis, from notes for a rogue translator to the commentary of an actress and her director about a film they've forgotten, Ed Park's stories are droll and lucid bites of life, published by Random House. Mew Mew Leather Basket, paired with I Want to Burn This Place Down. Taking aim at the price of insulin, Bill Clinton, and her own Big Five publishing house, Maris Kreitzman delves into broken establishment norms and her own shifting relationship to them. Published by Echo. Louis Vuitton Low-Key Hobo PM, paired with The Dance and the Fire. Translated from the Spanish by Christina McSweeney, Daniel Saldana Paris' fever dream of a novel finds a choreographer and her friends revisiting young love as her work whips their Mexican town into a frenzy. Published by Catapult. Dior Small Nolita Handbag, paired with Vera or Faith, a sharp 10-year-old girl in an unfair future, America prepares for a classroom debate and tries to mend her parents' relationship in this funny, mournful, sweet with no treacle, latest from Gary Scheitengart. Published by Random House. Hunting Season Small Basket, paired with Baldwin, a love story. Through interviews, newly unearthed archival material, and more than two decades of research, Nicholas Boggs constructs a richly complex portrait of the literary titan, his work, and his romances. Published by FSG. Book summaries for this article were by Keziah Weir. Thank you. no place like home. New homewares from Louis Vuitton fuse function and fashion by Kaya D. Gooseby. In the photos, Lagoon Sofa by Patrick Juan and Shakana Rug by Christian Muhadad, Cocoon by Estudio Campana, Chair by Louis Vuitton Studio, Totem Vinyl Record Player, Vases by Patricia Arciola, Dolce Vita Plates, Charlotte Perriand Cushion. A chair is still a chair, even when there's no one sitting there, Dionne Warwick first crooned more than six decades ago. But a chair is not a house, and a house is not a home when there's no one there to hold you tight. This year, Louis Vuitton is offering a mighty assemblage of stylish decor that will make your house a home, including chairs you might just fall in love with. The Louis Vuitton home collections span five categories: the newly inaugurated signature collection of furniture and lighting, which joins tableware, decoration, exceptional gaming, and the brand's celebrated objet nomade. For the latter, since 2012, the French luxury goods and fashion purveyor has collaborated with designers worldwide, like Estudio Campana and Patricia Arciola, to concoct limited edition creations ranging from a lounge chair made from carbon fiber and lined with soft leather to a stool that folds into a compact shape reminiscent of a handbag. This year, LV tapped French designer Patrick Juan and Argentine designer Christian Mohadad, among others, to reinvent the house's heritage codes and design the signature collection. The collection made its debut at this year's Salon del Mobile, Milan's annual design fair. It's not only about objects, Juan told Vanity Fair of his approach, because objects are, of course, very important. But what is a house? What is the lifestyle? It's about the objects in situ, he said, about what they'll mean in the lives of their owners as set pieces around which to gather with family and friends. It's about the whole ambiance, the whole mood, and an object can be important, but these pieces, they really set a very important tone. One of his creations does just that. He conceived of the Lagoon, a modular sofa that strikes a balance between fluidity and structure with its deep, comfortable seats as a functional piece of art that can be produced in various textures and colors. This article will be continued in the next installment. This program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. I'm Nancy Jones, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service and broadcasting from its studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. Vanity Fair Part A airs via special subchannel receiver on Saturday and Sunday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Daylight Saving Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Vanity Fair Part B airs via special subchannel receiver on Monday and Tuesday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Daylight Saving Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Both Parts A and B are available as a podcast at our website, www.ncreadingservice.org. Opening and closing music by Calexico. Interval selections by Mark Hoffman.